Rapping with Reef Bum is sponsored by Polo Reef, Champion Lighting and Supply, and GHL.
Hey, what's happening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Rapping with Reef Bum. I'm your host, Keith Berkelhammer. So on today's live stream, I welcome hobbyist Dwayne Oetreich to the show. What's going on there, Dwayne?
Not much, Keith. How are you today?
I am excellent, dude. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us here.
I'm glad to be here. Glad to be here. Your invite on the show actually inspired me to do a little extra tank maintenance this last weekend. So it's always inspiring to be recognized and invited on to anybody who wants to listen to me. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, man. And Dwayne passed along some video and a whole bunch of pictures. So we're gonna show all that and dig into it. So Dwayne, you've been on a few different live streams, I know. But for people that don't know you, he's been a SPS fanatic for over 18 years. He is an old-fashioned coral butcher and wholesaler for several local Seattle, Washington area locations. He is a retired treasurer and president of the Puget Sound Aquarium Society, and he is currently running an SPS dominant reef with a total water volume of 450 gallons. But before we start chatting with Dwayne, I want to take care of some business and thank the sponsors of this show. My sponsors are really, really important because they make the show possible with their support, and that means a lot since I want to continue to bring on awesome guests to help foster a learning environment on the show. Polar Reef is one sponsor, and although they don't get engaged in product sales, their sponsorship of this channel stems from Andrew's belief in supporting individuals dedicated to educating and sharing information about the hobby. With that in mind, make sure you check out Polo Reef's latest video dropping Wednesday, where the Polo Reef team does a panel discussion with Craig Bigman and Bob Stark. That's one I'm going to definitely tune into, touching on some very interesting topics. Also look for their Friday drop video where the Polo team gears up to take 8 stunning Japanese koi to Las Vegas for the first ever Japanese American koi show in the USA. Whoa. That's pretty cool. Another sponsor is Champion Lighting and Supply. Besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. And my third sponsor is GHL. Personally, I'm all in on GHL products. I have had a lot of success using their dosers, Profilux controllers, Mitra's lights, cage directors, etc. They produce high quality German engineered products. For more information or to purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA. I also sell their stuff on reefbum.com. One last thing in terms of my sponsors, if you dig what they are doing in terms of sponsoring this show and my channel, then thank them if you see them in person, at a trade show, or even when you place an order with them. That would be very much appreciated and very cool. All right, so Dwayne, with all that out of the way, let's talk reef, man. Let's get into it. How did you begin, man? So 18 years as a hardcore SPS nut. How did it all start for you?
Oh, I started back with freshwater when I was about 18 years old. I started out with a little 20-gallon tank, and right off the bat, it became a 55, then a 70. My brother actually put a golf club through the end of my 70.
What?
Whole other story. Golfing in the house is not
that
a
sucks.
Good thing. Yeah. So about the time I was in my early 30s, decided that I was financially stable enough to step up to the big show saltwater, which I knew was just more expensive and more time consuming than a freshwater. So back in 2005, I started out with a little 15-gallon tank and was hooked just after a couple corals. I think one of the first corals I bought was a baby blue pectinia. Mm. And I bought the thing. It was $5 back in 2005.
Did it have a name?
No, it was just a no-name frag. And I bought it. It was interesting. I've got it home, and I really actually disliked it because it looked just like an earlobe. It was shaped like an earlobe, and it didn't have any character. and I shoved it in the back corner. I had a 120. I upgraded, of course. Shoved it into the back corner of that 120, and after a year, pulled it out, and it was an actual Pectinia with all these lobes and interesting shape on it. Thought it was really cool coral. It was my probably my first and best LPS that I've had. But like I said, I was an SPS junkie right off the bat. Just as I was getting in the hobby, I met Richard Ross. I was living in California, and he needed some, he was doing a faux fish tank that he currently still has. And I offered to go down and help him build the canopy lid for it built into the house. And of course I was hooked then. And I tried to emulate Richard Ross's fish tank right off the bat when I moved into this house. So the big, lots of filtration, lots of food, and a lot of redundancy. So I started off on the right foot with a good mentor mostly. So,
man, that was my next question there, Dwayne. It was like, do you have any mentors that kind of got you into it? And, you know, you just slid right into that, you fell right into that that second question of mine.
Absolutely, yeah. Rich, like I said, he took me under his wing, let me ask all the stupid questions that a 6 month to ask. Like I said, I was in the process of moving up here to Seattle out of the Bay Area of San Francisco. So he was nice enough. He trusted me to lend me a CPR backpack so that I could actually put it on filtration while I was driving up from California, you know, a 24-hour day of literally packing corals, live rock, driving up here, getting it into a tank that I currently had running in this house.
Isn't it crazy what we do as reef keepers in terms of the you know, the degree that we go to, the steps that we take for this hobby?
It was a long day. And for, like I said, I had a tank already set up here, just a temporary hospital tank. And with Richard's advice and just the willingness, I actually did the 24-hour day. I had zero coral wow. loss. Of course, I didn't have a bunch of designer corals back then. It was a lot of, you know, bird's nest, like I said, that blue Pectinia, a lot of easy to keep pieces that were pretty hardy. So, and then currently, Mark Levinson, he lives reef and I, we talk pretty routinely. He keeps me on the up and up. I bounce ideas off of him when I'm having problems and vice versa. So I think, as you know, you've been in the hobby long enough to have a network, just a network in general of people that you trust that you can seek advice when you're having problems. Because God knows, even after 18 years, I still have plenty of problems.
Oh, it is so really important to be able to bounce things off of other, you know, fellow reef keepers. Because, yeah, there are things that, you know, you think after all those years, you would kind of like see it all, heard it all, whatever. But that's not true, because things can happen that are totally unexpected.
Yeah, well, trends change, medicines change, equipment changes, and I think you would agree, after 18 years, you start to forget some of the basics, and some of the problems that I had and worked through 15 years ago seem all new to me. I mean, in the back of my mind, I'm going, what? I know I've dealt with this before. What was the solution? Doesn't come to me, so then I just get on the phone or get on Facebook Messenger and start reaching out to friends and go, what am I doing wrong? What advice do you have?
So. Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned Mark, and I know I was watching you on his channel, and you guys were talking about how you have a penchant for liking to do resets on your tank. So we're going to, we're going to definitely get into the weeds a little bit on doing resets on reef tanks. It sounds like you're on the verge of another one.
Yeah, I've been putting it off for too many years. I've got a few LPS that are encrusting. Can't get to them. I mean, even if I try.
I'm going to show your video here.
It'll be an Aquascape Avalanche. There's just no way you can get a bone shears in and start chiseling away encrusted corals, especially when you have, you know, 8 and 12 inch colonies above them that you're bouncing your forearm off of. It's just a recipe for disaster.
And people think, you know, I mean, I know that, you know, I've put out videos about resetting, you know, some of my tanks, and some people think you're like a little crazy because the tank looks so awesome. And it's like, well, why can't you just do a little trim here or just, you know, take a lot back on one certain coral. But like you said, man, it's like when you have very well encrusted corals under the rock work, it becomes difficult because it's tough to you really have to kind of pull the whole rock structure out and start chiseling away. I think one thing that I don't that makes it hard in my mind is that when you do have all that encrustation, you can't just plant another frag on top of the an encrusted base of coral, because that will potentially overwhelm the frag.
Yeah, especially like I said, monoporas, or like I said, the favia that I have. There's a blue-green honeycomb favia that you'll see in the video that I've tried to take the bone shears to. I can't physically cut it while it's in the tank, and that's encrusted over in Monty Setosa, and it sends out sweepers. If I put a frag on it, there's this, it'll kill it in one night. There's nothing I can do. So
yeah.
So at that point, I break it down, get out the bone shears, and save what coral I can, and the rest just gets a good old dip to kill it.
Matt Carlton, thank you so much for that super chat. Thanks, Keith. Love the streams. Chris from ACI, beautiful tank. It's refreshing to see a mature tank with colonies. Keep up the great work. Yes. It is. It's not something you see a lot these days in the hobby, as a mature reef tank. You know, it seems that there's a penchant for people to just kind of grow some frags out to a certain size and then just start fragging them.
Yeah. I'm lucky. I have an addition on the back of the house that is a grow room, and it didn't start out as a grow room, as a wholesaler. It's when I do a system reset, that not only does it clear up LPS corals, it gives me the chance to, even for my own self, is to take a coral that I've had, maybe even a frag that's doing really well and vibrant, and I can put that up at the top of the rock work and let that grow into the next generations of showcase coral to entertain myself. I mean, I can only do so much with the Oregon Tord and the Blue Matrix and the Green Slimer. Or like I said, we were talking that Aqua Delight. That'd be fun after the reset to put that up on top and let it turn into an 8-inch colony of.
Let me show this this coral that you're talking about here, Dwayne, and it'll come up in like 20 seconds, I guess, in terms of what you're looking at since of the due to the delay. But when I saw a picture of this coral, you mentioned Aqua Delight. I thought Greg Hiller's Aqua Delight. Then I'm like, oh, maybe it's the upscale's Microcladus, like an old school coral from the your area in terms of the Pacific Northwest, in terms of that's where it originated from, that shop, Upscales, which I think is still a local fish store in the area, right?
Oh, yeah. And you know what's funny? I gave it that name. We were talking. I use it as a vendor list more than anything. The name is irrelevant to me in the fish tank. But as a supplier, I want my local fish stores to know what I'm giving them when I submit an invoice to them. They can say, yes, we want this. No, we don't want that. And one of them says, boy, at Aqua Delight, that sounds a lot like the Greg Hiller. Are you sure you want to use that name? Because people get confused and think it's the Greg Hiller. You don't want to go down there. And I was like, you're right. Well, what name should we give it? Because I couldn't think. I feel like I have enough reputation to start naming corals.
Yeah. Jason Langer, for Dwayne, changing the reef is like changing the channel.
It's getting harder and harder. It's a 14 day, and as the decades pass, it's more and more daunting, because my tank is. I physically built it 6'2" to the rim so that I can stand up, and the rim of the tank is at my forehead. I don't have to bend over to look in it. So every bit of work I do is on a ladder, two rungs high. It's just tiring.
So, all right. I want to find out more about how you run that tank in terms of the equipment. Then we can kind of get into some of the corals in the tank. And then let's definitely talk about, how you like to reset a tank. It's definitely a topic that I'm always interested in hearing others' opinions about. But so Dwayne, give us the lowdown in terms of like lighting, a skimmer. You mentioned filtration. What do you got running that tank?
Oh boy, well, I have a 150 gallon sump with I would call it a Bubble King skimmer, but it doesn't have the Red Dragon anymore. It has a Bubble Blaster pump that I've modified onto it. But it's literally an 18-year-old skimmer body on its third generation of pump. Have a couple Pan World return pumps, one for the display tank, one for the grow tanks, which currently is a 90-gallon and a 35-gallon grow tanks. Part of the sump behind the center chamber was going to be a live rock deep sand bed chamber, has evolved into that's my LPS grow rack. Just kind of neglected there. Lesser light, lesser flow, works really well. For filtration, that varies. I try to run ozone, but I run it strong, so it's actually eating the PVC fittings, and I have been too lazy to go buy more PVC fittings to feed it into the skimmer. The skimmer seems to handle it fine. The PVC does not. I think it, if you notice in my pictures, like that end view, the 6-foot tank end shot of any photographs that I take, they're always milky. And with this, with the ozone, they're crystal clear. It keeps the clarity of the water that much better. And of course, then because of that, is the PAR is a tiny bit higher on the sand bed. Even without doing that, I can still grow SPS on the bottom. I'm kind of a light freak. I currently have 3 skies, which I run all channels up at near 100% for about 5-6 hours a day.
Okay.
And I have 2, the Reef Bright XHO blues that I run at, those run at 100% 10 hours a day. A lot of light on the tank.
Did you mention what you're getting PAR level wise at the bottom versus the top?
The last I checked was about 550 up at the top of the rock. And I think about 180 down to 150 down in the lowest corners of the tank. So yeah,
that's pretty good.
Bed still. So, but like the Monty Satosas, the old Ponape Bird's Nest, they like it. They're happy down there at 150 PAR. So
yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, yeah, you know, if you get the if you put the right corals in terms of you know, the ones that are less demanding in terms of light at the bottom, and the ones that enjoy having more of the light intensity at the top, then, and you know, as you become a seasoned hobbyist, you know exactly where to put certain corals. Sometimes you learn the hard way.
Greg, a decade ago, my sump was reconfigured, and I had a Xenia live rock. I actually was using Xenia to harvest phosphate nutrients, and the Xenia grows literally under a 4-foot shop light with a two bulb shop light.
It's like an invasive weed.
PAR was on that, but I was always impressed that it grew like a weed down there. So.
Yeah, I have a frequent guest, Dong Zhou, on this show, and he does the same thing. He uses I think it's pulsing Xenia as a nutrient export mechanism.
Yeah, it sure can be. It did well in that sump area, low flow and low light, and I was happy. And like I said, it was made for great store credit.
For sure. What about, do you use a mechanical filtration?
It depends on the year.
It depends on the year.
Not this year. I have a Claracy skimmer or a filter sock that I was running. It became problematic. The motor started stripping out. So I just took it offline. I really liked it. Does great. And years before that, I was running just a pair of filter socks that I had in tandem. And I kept, I think, about 10 or 15 filter socks on hand so that I could just run a load of a filter sock laundry every couple of weeks.
How often? So you would just clean them every couple of weeks? Is that what you were swapping them out?
I would have to change them after about every third or fourth day.
Yeah.
They just get full of detritus and pull them out, throw them in a bucket, throw a new pair in. And then when the bucket was full, I'd run them through the wash machine with bleach. Didn't want to do it too often. Have my wife.
I was going to say.
filter sock that smells like a skimmer in the wash machine.
Yeah, I have to definitely be careful of, I don't want to like create too much of a nuisance down. I have all my tanks down in an unfinished basement. So I usually the any odor that might emanate from the basement here doesn't waft upstairs too often. So,
and then you know, throughout the years, I've been back and forth with carbon. When I'm diligent, I'm changing carbon once a month just to kind of help with water clarity and any allelopathy. I mean, I think allelopathy is a stronger problem in the hobby than most people realize, because it's something we can't test for. So I try to run carbon with that. And I think ozone also helps with it. And currently I have a Four Square Aquatics algae turf scrubber running on the system, which has been solid. That's a Jason Langer product there. Little plug to him. Got it for about a year and a half, and it's been problem free, so I can't complain about that.
What are your nutrients typically at?
Like I said, my nitrate and phosphate for years and years, that was red zero. So I quit testing. Now, when I run an ICP test or test manual, I usually get nitrate between 3 and 10, and my phosphate is, 0.04. It's usually pretty low. I bought 20 turbo snails the other day just because I literally have zero snails in my system. Mm. But one of my tanks has tangs. The display tank has 5 tangs, and they kill any algae they can reach.
Yeah,
so
they do all the work.
Snails don't do well in my system. There's 3 of them in my 90 that I've all actually inherited by people. They're going, hey, you've got enough system. You want these tangs? I'm like, well, sure, they're juvenile. And the 3 tangs, like in the 90, it's a yellow. It was 3. I took the hippo out and put it in the display. It was a yellow and a coal tang. And even after a couple of years, they're still only 3.5 inch.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the old adage, oh, a fish only grows as big as the tank you put it in. And there's something to be said for that. I don't believe that. I mean, we've all seen fish outgrow their tanks, but it certainly seems to slow their growth when they don't have real estate to run back and forth in.
Now, I'm showing the picture of the naso tang that you have in the tank, and it's bigger than that. I think that's a milli that it's next to there. How big is that naso?
I've had her for about 10 years, and she's, I think, 9 inches. Whoa. From nose to tail. Wow. Big fish. And that's part of why I do these system resets is when I don't grow as many as I used to. I used to have a lot of staghorns in the tank. And after 2 years, there just wouldn't be any swim room for the fish. And I could tell they would start getting aggressive towards each other and stressed out. So I would strip it down, re-aquascape it. And then more than anything, re-aquascape it for my own entertainment, kind of almost like an African cichlid tank, just to do that. And then highlight those corals, plus give those fish some swim room. I think our live rock starts to also get a little stagnant, just starts to overgrow with coralline algae, hold up any nutrients that we're putting into the tank.
Yep.
The bath kind of gets that stripped right back down to what used to be the ocean. So,
you know, you mentioned staghorn. So I'm showing the, what's the blue stag you have in that tank? It's incredible looking, and I'm a big fan of stags myself. I mean, I love the look, but I agree with what you're saying about them.
So on the lower left center, it's the purple one is the old, it's
the purple one. Yeah.
That's the OG. That's the purple Formosa that's been in the hobby since longer than I've been in it.
That is such a cool... I don't think I've ever had that stag.
Yeah, I don't even hear about it anymore. Like I said, I've had that for about 18 years. I think I've had it as long as I've been in the hobby. Never killed it. And if I did get rid of it, I gave it to a friend and then got a piece of the original clone back. So yeah, that's one of the last few stags other than, I guess, the green slimer, which you could see is way too big. So
yeah, the green slimer, that looks like it's growing out of the water.
It is. It's a picture of it. It's, I think, 20 or 30 tips growing out of the water, and that are actually just algae balmies on the surface at this point.
Yeah, that's what happened to the one that I used to have. It looked like it was growing out of the water, and I had to take it out of the tank because it got so aggressive. I'm trying to find the picture with your green belly slimer. Oh, here it is. Yeah, next to the to that other blue stag. But after I took that out of the that coral out of my tank, I was like, you know what? I don't think I could have a green belly slimer in my tank anymore. It's just so aggressive.
Yeah, mine doesn't. Well, can't say mine isn't aggressive, but just due to its fast growth, it is, it's killed off the Paletta's tricolor just due to lack of light and flow that underneath it. I have the Worldwide Corals yellow tip that's actually keeping up pretty good with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's on the back of the tank. It's not one of the front showpieces. It should be. I mean, it's worthy of being top center with the just the pink and yellow growth tips that are on it when it's happy. So
what's the blue stag next to the Slimer?
That's to the right or left of it. I'm just kind of
going. To the left.
That is probably my Cali Tort.
Is that your Cali Tort? Okay.
Yeah, unless you're looking. Yeah,
I'm looking at something else. Well, whatever it is, it's a cool freaking coral, man.
Yeah, too bad I should be logged in on the live stream on my computer. I would be able to see. I should have thought of that before we started streaming.
Yeah, Reefer Fish, we need a frag of that beautiful purple stag. Yeah, that is cool. That is really sweet. What was it?
A little bit of it's actually a pretty slow grower until it. I always plant it low because it does get big, and I don't want it just to take over the skyline. But once it gets out into the flow just a little bit, boy, that thing takes off. It just it spreads out. It doesn't grow real dense, as you can see. It's just kind of it's got very thick branches.
Yeah.
But it doesn't split off into fours and fives and grow little mini colonies on it. It's just its own lone stag.
It's cool. I see the Milka Stylo is right next to it. And it also looks like that might be is your Cali Tort next to it as well?
To the left, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, those three are all kind of grown right in there. The Slimeball Anacropora directly behind the Formosa. And then on the skyline up to the right it's an old Oregon Tort, the OG Oregon Tort that grows so slow. So that thing it's taken me about 8 years to grow it that big.
Let me pull that one up. That's a gorgeous colony here. Let's see if I think I'll just pull up the, you could kind of, it's like I pulled up one of your full tank shots. It's like right in the middle of the tank, just kind of sticking up above everything else.
Very, very top. I put it there just for that reason, knowing that it's one of those hardest to keep long-term corals.
Yeah.
I think I had 5 frags before I finally got it right. And what's funny, a friend of mine gave me that piece about 8-9 years ago. And it was literally a frag the size of my pinky fingernail. And I said, I'm going to name this one Lucky because it's going to be lucky my home because it's so small. And I've nursed it from that little pinky frag into a pretty impressive colony. I try not to cut it. It's one of those corals that's going to go great. I'll frag it one too many times and I'll lose the whole colony, including the frag. And that would be devastating to me at this point.
Do you back it up at all? I mean, do you have, backup frags? No.
No, I don't. Not of that one. Which is kind of stupid. I've found over the last decade that, having the grow tank, currently 3 tanks, 4 tanks share the same skimmer, same sump, same return pumps. And I've had issues in the display tank, say 6 years ago, again, had a chemistry issue that I didn't catch in time. And I had a slow tank crash. I lost all the SPS in the display over the course of 3 months. But the same corals that were growing in my 90 gallon and 35 gallon were unaffected.
And that's plumbed into the display. Those are plumbed in.
Same display, sharing, just passing the skimmer, going into those other two tanks, but didn't lose any of those in those tanks. It was literally just the display tank. And that's why, like I said, I think that allelopathy is a lot stronger than we realize, that when I'm losing corals in this body of water, but I'm not losing them once they pass the skimmer and had time to, what, I don't know if it's, I've suggested the scientific approach to, I think, Rich Ross and a couple of people, and they always balk at me. I equate it to when you have an LPS or SPS losing flesh, they're expelling all of their nematocysts, their stinging cells. But when a jellyfish stings you, how long after it's expelled those nematists into your skin, they keep stinging you. Well, when a coral's dying and expelling its nematists into the water column, I don't think anyone studied it. How long are those nematists floating around stinging the rest of your healthy corals until they finally die? Why I think that a lot of people get tank crashes is that they lose one coral. It's a small enough body water that it becomes toxic. Your healthy coral starts sliming. The toxicity just builds and builds, and suddenly you got a tank crash.
When you start having like a STN or RTN issues, what is kind of like your protocol in terms of trying to stop it?
I try to ignore it nowadays.
You don't want to think about it?
No.
Out of sight, out of mind?
No, not so much. It really just depends on what's happening with the coral. If I know that I've had an alkalinity swing or a drop and then I overreact and it swings up high and I can get it back down stable, and then 7 days later I see a coral, one of my hardy corals I've had in the system for 10 or 15 years, and it's just slowly dying from the base, I'll ignore it, because then I go, okay, that's just an alk swing. That's like people dosing kalkwasser. You hear them throughout the years, and you let your kalk reactor run dry for a day. It just gets your alkalinity swinging. That causes a slow STN at the base, and that's not anything I really panic over. If I come home from work and I've got a coral that looked fine yesterday and all of a sudden it's like eroding, then I will certainly take it out of the tank and try to save any frags I can, because usually that coral is going to be gone in, you know, if it's not 24 hours, it's 72 hours, it's gone. So if you can save it, I don't usually have much luck trying to save that coral. Every once in a while, it's worth the effort. So
yeah, sometimes if you get like a dozen frags out of it, maybe one will survive.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then mostly if one of those is just rapidly going up in smoke, I'll take it out just to keep the water clarity in that display tank. Because like I said, that I've seen it where a friend of mine, Todd, with a small 180 power head came off, blew his Cali torque, every coral downwind of that within 24 hours was dead. Just be like I say, that flesh blowing off that healthy Cali torque right on really? Down the line took out a whole line, three colonies just gone in a row, all within 24 hours.
Wow.
So yeah,
that sucks.
So, sucks for him. He's still in the hobby.
Well, you know what? We all, you know, kind of take our lumps in this hobby, right? I mean, you got to be very, very resilient, patient, because shit's gonna happen, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I've had just as much bad luck with LPS as I have SPS. So, I've torches. I can't grow torches. Acans don't like me. I've tried enough acans. I currently just inherited three that are in my LPS tank. I'm like, oh, that sure be neat to put those in the display. Better. I'll probably just end up selling them to the fish store for wholesale and let them make some money off of them. At least they stand a chance to live long term.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's, what about, do you ever think about using antibiotics when you're seeing STN, RTN? I know I've done it. Others have done it in terms of like Cipro or oxalic acid. Is that something that if you haven't yet done it, have been something you've considered?
The last time I was having an event, Joe Waiulo from the Long Island Aquarium suggested it to me and was giving me the dosage and everything. I don't have any on hand, so at that point I didn't try it. But I do believe in it, because I've seen in my own system where I get brown jelly pops up every few years. And I think that's just like, it's kind of like dinoflagellates. It just get that imbalance and that bacteria blooms. I think that Mark Levinson would agree. He's seen brown jelly on my SPS corals. I had an SPS dying a decade ago when he was up here, and he says, oh my God, that looks like brown jelly. That I've never seen anything like on an SPS. So I believe we have lots of bacteria in our tank that certainly get out of balance and get out of hand real fast. So the more we learn, the better you keep.
Yeah. Have you ever done an aquabiomics test? Curious about that? Not yet.
I did recently have to run Cyno ChemiClean again and get cyanobacteria. Believe it or not, it's I people in the Pacific Northwest believe it's a pollen thing. It's a springtime.
Yes, I've heard that theory. It's a spring and fall thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I tend to get it just when I'm lacking water changes or overfeeding and get careless and get out of my normal routine. So any imbalance.
Yeah, that damn cyano.
Yeah. It plagues.
Yeah. One thing we didn't, I didn't ask you in terms of calcium alkalinity additions. Are you doing calcium reactor? You mentioned Kalkwasser. What are you, two-part, what's your deal with that?
Because of the SPS grow, I have it's a Reef Octo. It holds about 24 gallons of media. And I have the doser. I have a 20 gallon tank. I go through about 20 gallons of CO2 every 4 months because that little bubble counter is just, I mean, I have that bubble counter dialed up to where it opens every, I think, 4/10 of a second.
Oh, wow.
So the calcium reactor works hard. And because of that, my pH runs about 7.7. So I run Kalkwasser. I dose about 5 gallons a day. And that keeps my pH at about 7.9.
So. Really? Just 7.9?
Just 7.9, yeah.
Well, Dwayne, I don't think you got a problem with growth, so it sounds like your pH is just fine.
Yeah, I have a hard time keeping up with alkalinity.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like that's really an issue for you. You mentioned ozone. Do you use UV?
No, I never have. It's just because I run ozone, I've never done it. I run it on my koi pond in the front yard. It makes a huge difference keeping the algae down. There's a place for it. Because I run ozone, I just always have. Then I don't have to worry about bulb replacement with the UV lamp. This is the only reason why I don't.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that can be kind of a pain in the ass. I run UV in my systems, and I think I clean it every 3 months, the quartz sleeves. And I guess once a year I replace the bulbs, but
Well, I get away with ozone because of the remote tank room. When I'm running heavy and I go to work out there, I mean, I open the door and I'm like, oh yeah, I have to turn this off. I mean, it's harmful to your lungs. So it's my tank room. And that's why, like I said, I get away with it. Whereas a lot of reef keepers probably shouldn't use it. You don't want to be smelling ozone in your living room when you're watching a movie on a Friday night.
That would not be a good smell.
No.
What do you have some like ventilation down with the tanks?
In the display tank, it's in my laundry room.
Okay.
So yeah, there is the bath fan. In the winter I don't run it. In the summer I just run it 24/7. And in the summer in Seattle, that's usually June to October, May to October, I'll run it. And then in the grow room, I have a huge, industrial wall fan, the vented type 2000 CFM wall fan that comes on. I have it tied into my Apex. It comes on when the tank temperature gets too hot, and that works in tandem with a ceiling fan that I plumbed in there when I built the room. And then when those don't keep up, I actually have a window AC so that the Apex actually turns those off and turns on the AC to keep the whole room hot. I figured rather than a chiller, why not just cool the room? Because I can go out there and work and I can be comfortable too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have a similar setup. When I used to have metal halide lighting on my display tank, one of my display tanks, then I have a half horsepower chiller that, you know, kicked on every once in a while. I mean, I still have frag tanks with metal halide lighting over them. So, you know, they do heat up. But I've got a couple of big industrial fans over those frag tanks. So when the temperature gets to a certain point, those fans will kick on. And now that I'm running LED lighting on the display tank that's plumbed into the same system as the frag tanks, the chiller really doesn't ever go on anymore, which is a really good thing.
Yeah. Are you running all LED or you still have a few halides on the system?
Still have a few on the display tank. It's all LEDs and the frag tanks are still halides in terms of two of the three frag tanks I have. So
my grow tanks are hybrid LED T5. I think the TFI adds some spectrum.
Yeah.
And it also just helps them spread some light out toward the edges of your tank. Even when we were running halide, I think that the T5 and the VHOs were helping it just spread some PAR out in those lower.
I tell you, man, nothing better than a combination of halides and T5s. That was like butter for me. It was coral growers.
Yeah, you know, I tease people. I says, I used to have 300-400-watt halides, a pair of T12 VHOs, and a pair of T5s over my display tank. It's always been the 30-inch. And my breaker box used to hum like a transformer, which was always scary to me. I was afraid my house was going to catch fire.
Yes,
breaker boxes hum like transformers.
That would worry me.
Yeah, it was always worrisome. So glad to switch to the LED. Just electrical savings, the heating.
Yeah.
Of course, I've been doing T5s. LEDs. I actually built my first full spectrum LED, which thank God we don't have to do that anymore.
Yes. So yeah. So I've seen this question pop up a couple of times in the chat. Why don't we dig into it? So Richard Colombo is asking, would love to know what his pest experiences are through the years. And then Alan says, with a tank like that, how do you deal with pest management and removal of unfully encrusted colonies, etc.? Beautiful system, by the way. So yeah, let's talk about you know, pests there, Dwayne. Have you had to deal with any pests over the years with that beautiful display tank?
I've had Mahano anemones. I deal with aptasias, vermetted snails, and those three big ones actually are part of the reason for some of my system resets in the past.
Wow.
Get Mahanos. There's just, you know, in a 200-gallon tank that's full of mature colonies that's 30 inches deep, you can only reach so many crevices and you can't get rid of all of them. Believe it or not, I've learned over the years that doing a system reset with just muriatic acid doesn't do the trick. You have to do muriatic acid and then give it a bleach bath. Muriatic acid doesn't kill every pest and enemy.
Really?
And certainly doesn't kill vermetted snails unless you soak it down to the point where you're losing actual live rock.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Oh, the problem with doing a system reset that hard is that then I have to cycle the display tank. What do I do with my fish in the meantime? What do I do with all this rock? Like I said, I have extra tanks in going so that I'm lucky enough I can do that. That's why I've kind of been putting off a system reset for the last 7 years. It's a lot of work.
It's been 7 years since your last reset.
Yeah, believe it or not, when I set this, I was telling you that time where I had that slow, the slow die off over the course of 3 months. Coincidentally, I had an AGA built in that I just had the two overflows in it. And by the end of the summer, a friend of mine was getting out of the hobby and he had a custom drilled 210, exact same footprint. His was drilled on the end. So I stripped it out. Rehomed all my fish. I think I probably had an extra 90 gallon or a 45. So I put those on the floor in a living room as a fish only. Lost all the SPS out of the display tank. So I didn't have to worry about putting them in a home. So I moved all the LPS into the grow tanks and was able to swap tanks over, at which point I did the muriatic acid bleach, cured the live rock in a garbage can for, I think, a couple weeks until I just started to see the ammonia start to slowly budge. And then I decided I'd finish the cure in the display tank. But this is the first time in my hobby that I have ever aquascaped a tank without water and sand being a murky mess. And I was using dry rock.
Uh-huh.
So I love this aquascape. That's part of why I haven't done it. It's just like, this is the neatest aquascape I've ever done because I did it dry and was able to use epoxy and see what I was doing.
See, but Dwayne, you can't even see the aquascape right now. I mean, that's the beauty of the mature reef, right?
I learned that when I first got into the hobby. I tell people I bought this rock. I paid $370 for a 45-pound piece of live rock because it looked like a castle with spires and this and that. And a year later, I was like, yeah, you don't see the rock. What's it matter?
If you're doing it right, then it's not going to matter that much. But, I mean, listen, it's Obviously, you know, open aquascapes and swim throughs are cool. Yep. And
I have a few pass throughs. There's a couple good hidey holes for the larger fish. You know, I mean, tangs get scared; they need to hide too. So it's not just about, you know, your algae blenny dipping in and out of the rock works. When you have a couple 8-inch, or you know, I have 5 tangs in that tank, so having some good places for them to escape and when they're stressed. Or just even get away from looking at each other for a minute or two.
Yeah, right.
It makes a difference. But that's not a reason to not re-aquascape. I need to do it because I, like I said, currently I have vermetted snails that have gotten out of control. And like I said, underneath of that giant purple Formosa, I just can't get a pair of pliers in there to kill those. I'll break the coral loose. It's not worth the trying. So it's time.
What have you tried in terms of natural predators for the vermetid snails?
I tried bumblebees. And of course, in a 200-gallon tank, a dozen bumblebee snails doesn't put much of a dent on it. And then being a wrasse lover, I tend to think my wrasses pick off small snails that size. But to go on with pests, I've had acro-eating flatworms. I've had monopora-eating nudibranchs. I've had red bug time and time again, being an SPS keeper. I think that's, I mean, the acro flatworms and red bug are pretty well inevitable hobby.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I tease. In the grow tanks, I'm able to actually just pick corals up and dip if they're suspect. In the display tank, in the years past with acro flatworms, believe it or not, I have a large enough water volume that I just take my RO and I blast corals with a straight freshwater with the RO, and then I use a turkey baster, and my hawkfish, coral beauty, flame angel, all of my antheas, and then I have a pseudochromis. They're all trained that when I'm in there with that RO hose and the turkey baster, they're in there eating acro flatworms like crazy. So I'm able to keep it the colony, the pests
in check.
Acro in the display tank in check. I've had them in there for, 6 years now. I don't even know when I brought them in because I dip everything and I inspect everything, but bringing in a wild mariculture colony from the fish store, there's only so much you can do to inspect and dip and quarantine.
Yeah. You know, it's something that everybody runs into, and they're tough, man. They're tough because of the eggs. It's just, you can't kill the eggs and the dips and all that stuff unless you're, basically cutting everything off the bases and dipping, but you know, they could still get through. That's the thing.
Yeah. I had polyclad flatworms for a while. Was telling you, I was running the dual filter socks, and believe it or not, I caught the first one in a filter sock. I was just cleaning it. I was like, oh my God, what is this weird thing? And you start to research, and they came in on a clam that I bought that I gave a freshwater dip. Wouldn't expect a clam to have polycloud flatworm eggs on it, but you know, 12 years ago, I didn't know that clams or polycloud flatworms were a thing.
Yeah. Well, that's so, the thing back, you know, in the earlier days of the hobby, it's kind of like nobody really was, you know, red bugs, black bugs, whatever, acro-eating flatworm. That wasn't like a major thing on everybody's radar until, you know, it started like getting kind of passed from one hobbyist to the next. And then it was like, what are these things? How do I keep them out of my tanks and how do I deal with them? And it's tough. I mean, you know, you get them in a display tank and you've got encrusting corals and you want to get rid of them. You're pretty much tearing that tank down. And, there are some, you know, things out there in the marketplace that say they can be in tank treatments, but I'm not really aware of them working uniformly for everybody. I think there's anecdotal evidence, but
I've heard great reviews about the KZ flatworm stop. I think it's out of Germany. I've looked into it and I go, I just can't afford that treatment for my tank. I mean, that's going to cost me $300-$400 and on a maybe.
Yeah, right.
Worth $300-$400 of effort,
right?
On a maybe,
right?
So, like I said, I just live with them. I think most of it's same thing with Aptasia is they're not a death sentence. A lot of this stuff isn't a death sentence. That, you know, with just enough routine maintenance, every couple months I go in, and in my display tank, when I'm dealing with Aptasia, I'm mixing up, you know, 45 cc's of calc paste, yeah. or I'm going through a whole bottle of F Aptasia to treat the Aptasias, and it knocks them back. It doesn't kill everyone. You know, I do it, and it takes the population down 80%, and then 3 months later, 4 months later, yeah, it's time to do another treatment.
Have you had any luck with peppermint shrimp?
No, because I have firstly I have wrasses.
Oh.
And the time I added peppermints, I learned that there is a shrimp hierarchy in the wild. I had 2 blood shrimp and 4 skunk cleaner shrimps at the time. And I added 15 peppermint shrimp and I never saw them ever again.
Oh, man.
In the dark. I'm looking. I don't think my wrasses ate them. I believe that, like I said, the blood shrimp seem to be more dominant. I don't know if it's just they have a thicker shell and stronger claws, but they kept the skunk cleaners at bay. They really just kind of bullied them around the tank. And I also believe that the skunk cleaners just kind of, because they were trying to eat and take care of the rest of the tank, that they kept the peppermint shrimp subdued underneath my rock work where they just couldn't get out and do anything.
Right.
And even, I think they all eventually even starved to death. So
yeah. Yeah.
So that was lesson learned. I mean, 15 peppermint shrimp even on a whole or so discount isn't cheap.
Yeah, that was an expensive addition.
As much as anything, I hate to add livestock to the tank with a death sentence.
Yeah.
Death sentence.
Yeah.
That was a mistake. Well, that was a horrible mistake, you know. So
yeah, I've had success with the peppermint shrimp. I've got one of my tanks has a flame hawk fish in it. And
yeah.
It's weird. He doesn't like, you know, I've put peppermint shrimp in. I've seen him like go face to face with a couple of the peppermints and he doesn't go after them, you know?
Yeah.
But I know a lot of hawkfish love shrimp. So
I have a long nose hawk and he hangs out with the 3D skunk cleaner. Always sitting there. I'm like, are you eating them? Or, I mean, this is like his real estate where he doesn't get harassed.
Yeah.
He doesn't bother him. He never has. Now I've had shrimps in the tank where I can get them to the rock work and they'll live for years. But they make a mistake where they're swimming out of the bag or out of the net, and the Melanaris is just grabbing them.
Yeah, quick and easy snack. Rich Colombo is asking, what about white bugs? They're super prevalent today, and the majority of SPS keepers aren't aware.
I haven't seen any. Of course, with the glasses on my face are reading glasses, so I can't see quite as well as I used to. And I break out my expensive camera and get some really high quality macro shots, I probably wouldn't know that I have them. It's kind of like red bug, though, with the mature colonies. As large as they are, pests like red bugs and even acro-eating flatworms won't affect a super large colony if you're diligent and they're healthy. When the pest population becomes overwhelming and the coral then suddenly gets sick, basically gets a cold or a cancer,
yeah.
Then you're lost.
Have you ever used Interceptor for your display?
I have 2 pills in the cupboard, but I have not used it probably in at least 5 or 6 years. I just haven't seen any in the display or the grow tanks at all. So I've been lucky in that regard.
Yeah. I think it was red bugs one time. So I used Interceptor on the system that they were in. And, so now, you know, I have a 20-gallon quarantine tank. And when I bring in new frags, I set up the coral quarantine tank. So I'll hit it, you know, a couple of times, in a 4-week span, every 2 weeks with an Interceptor. Interceptor, I've got those chew tablets, I guess. I don't know. I guess it's got the same ingredient as the Interceptor.
Yeah, you have a local vet that is willing to
work with you. I do. Yeah. He did me solid once.
Yeah, my local vet that I took my dog and my cats to used to carry it. They stopped. Luckily, we have a hobbyist who's a vet. And last time I worked with him, we actually bought a whole case, and it was for the Spokane Club and then a lot of Seattle area locals. We just all went in on a case and got a discount price, which was really nice. So So after my last two pills, I'll be reaching out to Terry again.
it's a good thing to have, like, you know, in your quiver of things to treat a tank, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I don't have Cipro. I do keep like the Furanzol, the fish medicines and stuff. But yeah, like I said, the more you keep in the cupboard, as long as it's not something that's going to expire, the better off you are to deal with anything that comes up, because it will come up.
It will. So let's talk about tank resets, man. So I'm not sure if you mentioned on this live stream. I know when, you know, we're talking offline, you said something about a 14-hour. It takes you about 14 hours to reset a tank. What's your process in terms of resetting one of your reef tanks?
So first, it's about a 3-week mental preparation. And a lot of it is just a game plan. How am I going to do it this time? Because the corals have different growth. What corals do I really want to focus on making frags of? Do I have room in my frag tanks for those corals? Are they all going to fit into the coolers that I have? Because I don't just throw them into a plastic tote. I have a large 128 quart tote cooler from Costco. I used to use it for salmon fishing. But it's, you know, it's 3 feet long. It holds probably 40, 50 gallons of water.
Oh, wow.
So I'll actually take a 5-gallon bucket and preheat that with hot tap water just to kind of precondition the plastics in it, pour it out, and then I start putting the tank water in it so that the tank water doesn't drop in temperature. One thing I've learned in doing these resets is that putting a heater in can be more detrimental than anything, because I don't have a controller on the heater. Usually it's been bumped from the last time I took it out of storage and put it in. So I actually just put a power head only in that cooler for the 8 or 10 hours that I'm working. I say 14 hours because it's usually 14 hours getting the coolers and then a little bit of cleanup.
Yep.
But so I fill the cooler up. If I am doing a tote with a heater, it's for my fish, because a lot of the fish that need to get relocated. I'm also grabbing live rock, and I'm trying to get, if I have a blenny or any small fish, I'll have to put it in that tote, and hopefully they'll come out. I can shake them out. I had an unfortunate event. I missed one years ago, and I was cycling the rock and saw this dead fish that I had killed. And like I said, that these are my pets.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
I was pretty bummed out that it's like, it's one thing when they jump out, even though I have netting on, or one gets sick. That's part of the hobby. I've been doing this for, God, I think I was telling you, since 1988. That's almost 40 years that I've been keeping fish. Fish are going to die. It's sad. It's part of the hobby. But if anything I can do to avoid killing them, I don't want to squish them with a net or crush them with a rock or throw them in a vat of muriatic acid. My God. Horrible.
That would be.
So I strip the tank out, strip the corals out. I try to do a little bit of fragging as I'm getting started. A lot of it, believe it or not, is just going into a bucket as my bucket of death that's going to become calcium reactor media, because I can't save it all. I don't have enough real estate to make 1,000 frags. I don't have enough time to make 1,000 frags in a day. And a lot of pieces, when you frag out of a colony, people don't understand. Is that if I take a colony, when I do a system reset, I'll cut it. I try to look at it and save the best mini colony piece. This is the piece I'm going to plant back in the display tank. If I'm lucky, I can get another smaller mini colony that can be my new grow, my mother colony for frags. Especially if it's a fast growing, that I can make that. Maybe I'll make 5 or 6 frags out of the really nice tips that are going to sail real quick. The rest of it is base. And if I cut a base that's just a pinky stub, that's going to take me 6 months to get it to grow branches and encrust and turn into something I can sell. I don't have enough real estate to do it. 6 months into what might be sellable. So it all just goes into the bucket of death.
I it's the same thing for me, man. When I do the same, what you're describing in terms of taking colonies out of a mature reef tank, there's only so much you can frag that's really usable and sellable, or stuff that you can give away. The, you know, kind of like the meat of the coral, the inside of the coral. There's not much you can do with that.
Yeah, I don't think that we talk about it a lot nowadays. Is like shipping coral, for example. The growth tips have those. The DNA in the genetics is programmed to grow right now, whereas the base of that colony has lost that growth DNA. That's just a survival DNA at this point. It's got less light.
Interesting.
Less flow. It's less healthy material. It's not growing like a weed right now. It's just sustaining. So to turn that into a frag and expect it to do well, it doesn't really do well. It takes a long time for that to kind of just take off and heal. It takes longer. It doesn't do as well. So I've learned, I just toss it out. Like I said, I get it all in, and then I have my muriatic bath acid bath ready. It's a very strong solution. It's not, I mean, I'm pouring a half a gallon of muriatic acid into a 5 gallon or 20 gallon tote. So I can take 4 or 5 pieces of live rock. I put them in 15 minutes. And by then the coralline algae's burnt off. And at that point, I'm rinsing them in water. And then I have to decide whether I want to give it a bleach bath or not. If there's a bunch of bermetids, I'll usually take bone shears and cut them off. If I've learned when I was dealing with Mahano anemones, it got a bleach bath. The muriatic acid did not kill Mahano anemones in 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow, that's pretty unbelievable.
So, yeah, they're tough. So, because, well, they can crawl in. I mean, they just retract into their little crevice, kind of get a mucus shell over the top. And maybe it burned the tentacles off, but the meat of the foot and the body was is sustainable enough that it would grow back. I had a couple survive my last treatment. So they got the bleach
They're
acid.
They're tough buggers.
I give the bleach acid, the bleach bath, probably about an hour. Because I want to kill everything at that point. At which point then it goes into another freshwater dip. I think the last time I did a big bleach bath, I freshwater dipped it, drained it off, freshwater, drained it off, and then hit it with some, I mean, I go through a lot of dechlorinator on a day like that.
How worried are you about impacting the microbiome of that tank? I mean, are you keeping other live rock and whatnot in the sump or in one of the frag tanks?
Yeah, like I said, I cheat. I've got 450 gallons of water volume, so I'm only affecting, at that point, 210 gallons. I do turn off the return pump for the display because I want to siphon it down, settle out, and get most of the detritus out while it's just sand bed. I can address the sand bed while I'm doing it. If I'm doing a full reset in the past, usually I'll siphon. I'll just get rid of the sand and throw in 120 pounds of new sand. Like I said, I cheat in the sump. I started out 10 years ago underneath the skimmer. I had a live rock chamber, a little benthic live rock chamber. And I had about 100 pounds of live rock. It was base rock. It wasn't beautiful. Sat underneath the skimmer. 3 years, a friend of mine got out of the hobby. It was an amazing deal. I bought 150 pounds of live rock from her. And that's currently underneath of my LPS grow tank. I have an extra 250 pounds of rock.
There you go.
That's, you know, part of it's no flow. The stuff in the LPS tank, I actually have a wave pump under the frag rocks that blows across all those rocks, and then it's actually passive flow up through the rock or the rack. So yeah, when I'm redoing that system, it shocks the whole tank. I mean, I end up getting diatom blooms. If I don't clean the rock well, I'll get a cyano.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole system, it's a shock to the system. It is. It's a reset. It's. I mean, I go through the ugly phase. Trust me, there. I don't have massive algae blooms because I end up putting five tangs back into the system, and they're like, "Oh, great, we're gonna get some real estate. We actually have bare rock we can see. Finally, they can graze on some algae." Mark Levinson teases, I picked up the Nori Nibbler last fall after his Markna event. And I broke the cage right off the bat. I have a 3D printer, so I STL'd myself one. My Nori Nibbler currently, I can take two full sheets of Nori, fold it in half,
and put
it wet, slide the cage over, and I put it in my display tank every other day.
Wow.
Two full sheets every other day. So, like I said, it's a big system. It takes a lot of abuse and a lot of food. There's about 40 fish throughout the system, and all four of those tanks all have fish. So I find the fish, the tangs don't necessarily do great for algae control, but having fish in every one of those tanks forces me to address and look at every one of those tanks and take care of my pets every day. Yeah. So I don't ignore them.
Yeah. No, I think I have one of my systems. I have a cryptic sump plumbed in to the display tank and the frag tanks. And that's like a, it's basically like a 2 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot black box. Polyurethane. Is that the right?
Carbonate, just a black, like a black acrylic.
Yeah. Black. It's like a black acrylic box, plastic, whatever it is.
Light at all in that.
No light gets into that at all. And so I've got about 100 pounds or maybe it's about 120 pounds of live rock in that. So that's great.
Yeah.
You know, so
Yeah. See a lot of bare bones tanks with bare bone rock. And that's kind of, I go, oh boy, you're going to be really counting on that mechanical filtration.
Yeah.
And gets a tiny bit out of whack. I don't know, maybe we're old school. We say lots of live rock for all that benthic filtration and surface substrate material. Is that really a thing anymore?
I don't know, man. I'm a big advocate of having some live rock in the system someplace, you know, whether it's, you know, what you were talking about in terms of how you have it, you know, in next to your skimmer in that compartment, or whether it's a cryptic sump. I think the more microfauna, sponges, microorganisms, what have you, that you have in that system, the better, and you know, the more it'll just become a more mature system quicker. Even though you're, you know, and I know there's a lot of bacteria products out there that you can dose to get jumpstart things, but I also think that there's some magic with the live rock.
And you're right, and having all that rock, especially in both of those areas, the ones that under my LPS system that actually gets light. The last time I pulled that rock off, I had, I think, 5 or 6 different kinds of sponge growing. There was black sponge, the baby blue, white, yellow, orange. I think there was, well, and then of course the little pineapple sponges.
Yeah.
Still have those in the system even after 18 years, which is good. I mean, usually they take off and then they burn out and you don't ever see them again. So yeah, all those sponges it's just more filtration. That's just an extra skimmer, a little live skimmer in there sucking out nutrients and growing off of it. So
yeah,
certainly can't hurt.
So you have a much different approach than I do in terms of the tank reset. You're basically doing it in half a day, and I take months. I do mine like I started my tank resets, I think, back in November. And I'm pretty much done now, but I'll take like one colony, you know, out and frag it and, you know, take the rock that it was on and chisel it to get all the, you know, encrusted, you know, coral off of that. And I would do like 2 or 3 colonies a week or something, or maybe every couple of weeks, and just be more methodical about it.
Yeah. So since this, like I said, I love this aquascape and I've been avoiding this full-on reset. I was going to do it 3 years ago. I was ready to jump in, and I was beta testing for the Neptune at the time. And Terrence went, "You're going to be getting those skies in 2 weeks. If you tear that tank apart, they'd be raging mad because they wanted me to brag about the LEDs. They're a good light. I still love them after 3 years. I was considering buying another one at the fish store on Sunday when I was down there. But I've tried the slow approach 3 times now. I've actually worked a third of the tank.
Oh, really?
Where I've just taken corals out. You know, I haven't removed any of the rock because the rock is stacked in a way that if I take it out, it's never going back. So I would take the corals out, prune them, clear out some vermetted snails that were under the rock work, maybe get some aptasias that were a little harder to get to. I use the the Mahana wand. I was,
yeah.
He marketed that. That's a long story. I actually have what's called the Aptasia Zapper. In reality,
there's a few of them out there, right?
Actually, the first one to plug something into the wall and stick it in my fish tank.
Really?
So, I have the Aptasia Zapper, which is
up to its name.
That's what I named it. It was the Aptasia Zapper. But it's just a coat hanger with some garage wire and the tube and my system melting a quarter inch of 18 gauge copper once every 6 months isn't going to cause me to have copper poisoning in a 450 gallon system. So I can do that. And I use that Aptasia Zapper to get to the hard to reach Aptasias during that reset. And I've done it three times, but like I said, there's just areas of the tank I can't get to. So it's time to reaquascape and show off some of those new corals. And then for that matter, confuse my fish. They're not going to know what to do.
Fish get freaked out. That's for sure. I took out a ginormous like orange cap, which I had a pair of like clownfish that were hosting in this orange cap because there's not really any other corals in that tank that they could host in because I barely keep any LPS. So they were pissed off and actually one of the damsels was like biting my hand as I was taking that cap out. I guess it was getting pissed off too.
Yeah, my hippo tank has a very specific spot that it goes and hides in if I'm working on the tank. And when I was doing that photo shoot the other day, I was doing a bunch of top downs and I took three pictures from three different angles and I realized my antheas were all in the same spot. I'm like, I never realized my antheas actually have a hidey hole spot where they all go to, but dressed out. So, you know, it's the little nuances you tend to overlook after being in the hobby for so many years.
So Dwayne, what do you do in terms of, you know, making sure your parameters kind of stay stable when you're doing a reset in terms of like calcium, alkalinity, your nutrient levels, you know, how do you manage that stuff? Do you kind of like dial stuff back during the reset?
Now I have the Trident, which I'm pretty faithful in. I've never had any bad luck with it. I mean, as with any electronics, it glitches out. But yeah, the first thing I do when I do a system reset is I turn my calcium reactor down 50%. I'm just gonna turn the CO2 way down. I leave the flow up, and I'm gonna test manually every day. Alkalinity, calcium. Because it's the calcium reactor, I don't necessarily worry about calcium and magnesium and being in balance.
Yeah.
But I certainly test every day. I'm testing my whole system for ammonia. Mm. Because if there's an ammonia spike, I need to react to that immediately. Big water changes. And then some Zeavit, I forget the name of the white rocks you use to help suck it out. I haven't used it in so long.
Oh, yeah.
Go and buy some before I do it, trust me. I get there. but it's not right. Like I said, careful neglect is something I preach to people. That's how you grow those big mature colonies, is not getting your hands in the tank and rearranging. I see so many new hobbyists go, "Oh, I'm rearranging my tank again because the one coral wasn't where I wanted it, and I'm just going to rearrange my rock while I'm at it because," and I'm going, no, don't do that. Leave your rock. You can take a couple corals and move them around, but leave your rock alone. Trust me, you know, don't stir your sand bed up under those rocks routinely.
I've seen some amazing things with, you know, SPS when you just like leave stuff alone, you know, and try not to like be a tinkerer. And like you said, keep your hands out of the tank. It's amazing, you know, once they are just like left alone and let Mother Nature you know, take its course, how things just naturally will grow out and evolve.
So a couple of, I guess that goes back to when I was telling you, like, the base of a large colony doesn't necessarily have the genetics and the programming to grow. A few years ago when Joe Waiulo from the Long Island Aquarium did his system reset. We've been friends for 18 years or so. So I wanted to send him a box of coral, but with a 20,000 gallon tank, I didn't want to send him a box of frags. So
some chunks.
A bunch of mini colonies for him, and none survived. The same day, I sent a frag pack to Mark Levinson of all the same exact corals, 15 or 20 corals each. And I'd say 60, 70% of Mark survived. I don't ship, so I'm not necessarily have the heating packs right or have the amount of water per bag right. But Joe had even mentioned, boy, I shipping mature colonies.
It's tough.
It just doesn't work as well as shipping a small frag. And believe me, I mean, I was using some water volume. I mean, his was a 30-pound box, and that was all water because knowing their larger colonies, they needed more water for the and just to dissipate their slime coat. It didn't work. And he had even mentioned, let's try it again in the future and just send me frags because they tend to ship so much better. So, like, even in my tank, I can't take that purple Formosa or even that Oregon Tort and move it from one location to the other because just the flow alone is detrimental to that coral.
Yeah.
If I take a mini, that mini colony can adapt to the new conditions far better than a large colony can. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of shipping over the years, and I've found that I started using oxygen when I started shipping frags, and then the last few months I was starting to kind of ship some chunks of SPS, like, you know, like you're saying, like the mini colonies and all that stuff, and I think the oxygen definitely helped. I think the big wild card is definitely temperature. And that's probably the one of the more important things in terms of shipping, and that's a tough thing to do because, you know, you've got like you said, you got to get the heat pack thing right, and sometimes you're shipping from one location where it might be warm out to another location where it might be cooler, and then the box is going to be sitting someplace overnight in a UPS or FedEx hub, and you know that's got different weather, so. There are a lot of variables in play when you're talking about shipping stuff, but yeah, I think you're right. The larger the coral, the tougher it is.
Yeah, I've become a lazy reefer. I used to sell to the public. Of course, I was never licensed, and I don't like to compete with the local fish stores. So the local fish stores are important to me, and their longevity is important to me. I used to be employed, so I know their struggles. Shipping to Joe and Mark is the first time ever, and I wouldn't say the last time I'll ever ship, but it's nothing that I do routinely. So that was I talked with Joseph Caparata from
Unique Corals,
and he gave me some pointers, but maybe I didn't listen well enough, or I just didn't understand what he was trying to tell me, and it didn't work out really well. So I deliver to the local fish stores, a wholesale. I got a pretty good wholesale deal with them. They respect that. I try to respect it. I'll have a friend come over in need, or even a new reef keeper that just had a full tank crash. It's like, PM them on the side. Come on over. I'll give you some corals. I mean,
you're out to
this and you just lost every coral. Don't get discouraged. Don't leave the hobby. There are people that'll help you. So.
Well, it's called, Reefer's Code, right? You're helping out another brother, sister, or whatnot, and you never know if you need a backup. Could happen to you one day, losing that coral. So you're banking it.
Absolutely. I had an old friend reach out to me. He's got a 300-gallon. I mean, this happened to be down by the fish store. I was dropping off an order. He said, can you come by? My tank's sick. I need help. And he had lost, 2 years ago, his tank was great. And it was down to where he like had a couple LPS. And the only SPS left was the Milka Stylo.
Beautiful coral.
And it was chemical burned all over. And just, I'm going, why do you even have it in your tank still? It's just, and we went into his grow tank, and it was the same thing. There was lots of little Milko stylos everywhere that it looked like they had chemical burn. And I explained to him, I said, dude, you just got to tear all this out. Tear all this coral out. Siphon your sand bed. Do as big a water change as you can. Let things settle in. And get a hold of me in 3 weeks, 6 weeks, when you're done with your work, the hard part. You got to nuke this tank. System reset. Yeah. Get a hold of me and I'll hook you up. Cause he and I, we've known each other for 20 years and he's given me, he broke down a whole tank. He had swimming aphasia one time.
Swimming aphasia?
Yeah, I got a couple corals. Can you come and hold on to a couple corals from me? And I went home with 15 mini colonies. I'm like, that's not a couple corals. That's 15 mini colonies, man.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesse, just come on up and get some coral when you're ready. So, and at the same time, is you know how it is successful. You can't necessarily sell every piece. Not every piece is retailable. I got plenty of frags that'll make great starter colonies for someone who wants to start out and doesn't want to spend $1,000. So,
yeah,
especially an old.
That's important. I think in this hobby is like there's got to be that kind of mentality in terms of really helping other fellow reef keepers out that might be in need or might be starting out and need a mentor or just need some, it's not a cheap hobby, you know?
No, but none of us really got into it to make it into a job and make money off of it. We got into it because the corals, I mean, it's an ongoing science experiment, never-ending science experiment. And there's always wonder, like I said, I still look into my tank and, I mean, I've got a above my frog spawn on one end of the tank. That's why I was telling my wife. I said, there's a Monty cap growing there. It's the flower petal Monty growing. I've never had a flower petal Monty on that rock. Where did that coral come from?" She's like, "Well, it must have spawned." I'm like, "I don't know how it got there. I mean,
hitchhiked.
The hitchhike off. Well, there's never the only thing I've ever grown there since my last reset was zoanthids.
Oh.
So I'm thinking, well, I guess potentially when I was fragging and had some bone shears, one little polyp and a piece of flesh could have just blown off of the power head. And here it is 2 years later, it's growing because I have certainly seen pieces on my live rock sit stationary for 2 years before they take off. So.
Dude, I mean, the corals are so resilient, you know, in one of the tanks that I reset, I did a 7-day blackout. I took the remaining corals out of that tank because I was having some, you know, little cyano issues and it was annoying and what have you. So I was like, let me do a 7-day blackout and see if that helped. And, you know, knock on wood, it's been 4 weeks since that and the cyano has not returned. But, you know, I had some of the acro encrusted colonies on the rocks or whatnot that I scraped off and what have you came back after the 7-day blackout. And after a couple weeks later, they started growing back. I was like, how is that possible? You know, how is that possible when you just completely destroy an acro colony, take everything out, you know, in terms of that was encrusted and there's like a pinky, you know, type of thumbnail piece of like encrusted coral that was like bleached out, that like died during the 7-day blackout. And how did that come back? You know?
A good, you know, that's the stability and water quality, just enough.
I guess. All it takes. There's all it needs is like a couple of cells, right? And then boom, you're in business.
Well, that's I tease. This Mother Nature's tough. So, I mean, my reef tank has proven that to me, that it's more resilient than I give it credit for in a lot of ways. So
yeah,
it survives every time I do something stupid.
It just keeps like surprising you. Let's take a few look at some more of the corals in your tank, man. I kind of want to do a little kind of guess in terms of what these are. You're not looking at the live stream here, but I'm sure you'll tell me whether or not you think you have these corals. So I'm seeing like four corals in this one shot. The one to the right of me looks like a home wrecker. Do you have a home wrecker in the tank?
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah, that looks to me like Jason Fox home wrecker. With a the Oregon blue tort kind of below that. There's a blue coral. I can't tell if that's a. I don't think it's an Ostera. It's something else. It's a gorgeous kind of like aqua blue coral with violet magenta tips.
Yeah, that's I actually logged in. Everybody probably saw me laugh. I logged in and the first thing I got was a YouTube commercial. I'm like, really?
Oops.
That was a wild colony from Fiji from one of the last we used to. When the Puget Sound Aquarium Society was running, we used to do what was called the Bob Moore Frag Swap.
Okay.
And that club would be giving back to people. So you'd walk in and you'd get a raffle ticket. And that Jesse that I had mentioned, and then another friend, Todd, who had the wipeout, the three of us all had decided to get that coral so we could do some coral banking.
Gotcha.
Me and Jesse killed ours, and then Todd kept his alive and gave me a frag back.
Gorgeous.
And then just some wild Fiji piece from a decade ago that we've all managed to keep alive. It's doing really well there.
What's the go ahead.
He actually came by. He broke down his 180 because he moved and was setting up a 65-gallon cube, and his house flooded. He had a beach house that flooded during a king tide. Yeah. And set it up last fall, and I'm making frags for him. And he's going, well, how about that tip right there? And I'm grinding with my biggest bone shears. I'm like, no, dude, this is your coral. And I am giving him a mini colony of. He's like, holy crap, you just gave me half that coral. I'm like, this is your coral. It just happens to be encrusted into my tank. I'm not sending you home with a frag coral. So to the bottom left there, it's missing about 2 or 3 inches of was there.
Well, what's the darker coral with the purple tips? Do you have any idea?
I don't recall. That was a piece I got from Golden Basket, Rudy Batara, during the frag swap 2 years ago.
Cool.
If I were to pull the plug, the name is written on the frag plug still. I may be able to remember. Yeah,
there you go.
But just a nice dark piece. It's kind of held its own between the...
It almost looks like a rainbow loom type of coral.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like I said, I don't recall. It's doing its best to fight for real estate. It's a fairly slow grower for me.
So now the... I'm showing another picture. It's a wider shot of that same kind of grouping. Is that a PC rainbow I see to the left of...
Don't have any.
You don't have a PC rainbow? It looks a lot like a PC rainbow I've got.
I lost my colony. Some of the locals have it. That is actually are you talking about the to the top left?
Yes.
It's because I finally got caught up. That is a piece that my local fish store had in their display tank 15 years ago under metal halides. I picked it up. I mean, it's the most vibrant metallic red under metal halides.
Uh-huh.
They even remember owning it. It's a piece that I've kept alive. It's kind of my canary in the coal mine. It's the first one to turn brown on me. It's perfect.
Yeah.
But I just named it Red Prostrata. I doubt it's a Prostrata, but they know what they're getting when they see it on the invoice. So...
Yeah, that's a cool coral. We've got Sonny here from Sonny. I don't remember. You know Sonny? What's his name? Sonny Reef Site. He is the original source of the PC Rainbow. He says I need to send him some PC Rainbow from the source.
I don't remember the name of his actual. He's got the YouTube channel as well, right?
Yeah, Reef Site. I think is the name of the YouTube channel. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, here's another this is another guess here. I see you'll see it in like 20 seconds. This is a coral that's up against the glass. To me it looks like a TSA Bill Murray. Do you have that coral? Do you know?
Do.
You do. Okay, that's got to be that coral. It's a fast grower, right?
See if it'll pop up for me.
It's right next to the Oregon Blue Tort.
Yeah, that's the largest table that's on top there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's overgrowing the top of that red one. The red one underneath it that you can barely see.
That looks like a PC rainbow too.
Everything in my tank that's remotely kind of red just likes to all be that same color. and probably nutrient. Some of the pieces, if I were to move them to lower light, tend to get more green to them. My red planet is currently so shadowed right now, it's actually mostly green.
Oh, really?
But I'm not sure what that is. That's one that I got from one of my local vendors. Natalia gave it to me. And it's as big as the Bill Murray. It's just the Bill Murray has grown faster over the top of it. unfortunately, the little red one, it was the first to make it to the glass, so it keeps getting algae scraped flat.
So, Dwayne, you know you got to do a reset when you're scraping corals, when you're scraping the glass, you know? I mean, that's always, that's actually how my TSA Bill Murray and my, I had a 2-foot-long TSA Bill Murray and PC Rainbow that fused together, and they basically were held up by two small stems on two different pieces of rock, but they all tipped over against the glass. But I was doing the algae scraping on the glass and bumping into the, I think it was the Bill Murray, and that just kind of like jarred it. And then it was like, it was all over after that.
And that's it. Just the other day, I have the, what is it? The two-sided, I'm horrible with recall some days, but my mag cleaner isn't doing the job. So I had to get out. I have an old deep scraper, and I put the blade on it.
Yep.
Blade. And it's a thicker magnet than my daily scraper. So I fragged, I think, 10 frags off of the green slimer, 5 or 6 off of the worldwide corals yellow tort. The pinky, the bear, got shattered and broke. That red one underneath got shattered, broke. I can't get to them. They fell down in work, and I can't get even... I've got a pair of 24-inch tongues. I can't reach all these potential cracks. So it's like, it's time for a system reset.
It's kind of like you fight it. You know, you fight it for a long time, and you're resisting because the tank looks so freaking awesome, right? You're like, you don't want to reset a tank that looks great.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where it's just like, it's so beautiful. And in doing so... I won't be able to keep that Oregon tort there. I'm going to be forced to frag the Oregon tort. I'm going to be forced to frag that Bill Murray. And like I said, in that top down, that Bill Murray is so natural looking, starting to grow up over the top of itself even. And it's just, it's the necessary evil of being successful.
Right.
You have.
Right. Right. It's part of the, It is one of the things that you have to deal with when you're having fast growing, healthy corals. I'm looking to see what else I could show. So you got some really kick ass looking lobos on the sand bed, and you've got some mushrooms. I could see. Do you ever regret putting certain corals into your reef tanks?
Absolutely, those mushrooms. Those mushrooms I did not plant there. I actually had those down on the right end of the tank on a specific rock. And they were behind, I think, a Pectinia. I think I had the Space Invader Pectinia or a Wellsophilia doing well. So I pulled the Wellso and I pulled that rock. And that's currently the Hippo Tang's hidey hole is where that mushroom.
Yep.
Somehow a mushroom let loose and landed there, and that colony has arrived from that. I've actually had to cut those back off of the that blasto a couple times.
Oh, pissing the blastos off?
For system reset, because I can't, there's no way I can get those mushrooms out of there. That's on a base rock that the rest of the rock structure is.
Yeah.
You know, I could alk paste them, or I could actually Aptasia Mahano wand them.
Yeah.
But still, that's just a short-term solution.
They'll come back.
They'll come back. Molecule of flesh, and they'll come back.
Yeah, yeah.
Lobos are one of the only good LPS that can do well in my tank. The frog spawns and a couple chalices. And those are down on the rock work, and I have to tuck them out of the flow, have to tuck them out of the light. I like them, but... They're kind of finicky. I mean, just the other day, I cleaned my power heads, and I'm going, "Oh my god, I'm going to kill my frog spawners!" Just
can't handle it.
Doing so well yesterday, it's all pissed off now.
What about Ghaniapora alveopora? You ever?
I just had a friend getting out of the hobby, long friend who's been in the hobby longer than I have, invited me over. He all of his fish died. In small little tank, something. He said his skimmer blew up and blew. Just the skimmer mate going back into the system. He woke up the next morning and his fish were dead. So he was discouraged and sent me home with his last few corals. And I have a little baby blue, I think it's an Alveopora, that I planted in between a couple of the Lobos, just because I know it's lower light, lower flow. Yeah. And this seems so far. So,
circling back to the resets, and then we'll wrap it up, man. What is your advice to somebody that is considering doing a reset? What should people be thinking about if they want to, you know, kind of jar the system, so to speak?
Well, that's a tough one. If you have a little 30-gallon tank, this reset's going to be tricky. You're probably not going to be able to do it in a day. That I would recommend, and I have recommended someone like a 30-gallon or a 50-gallon. If you really are dealing with mojanos or pest anemones, vermetted snails, you're at wit's end, and you really want to go that route where you need to bleach and muriatic acid your rock, you've only got 30 rock gallon, pounds of rock in the tank, do 5 pounds at a time. And know that when you put that rock back into the system, it may spark a dinoflagellate bloom or a diatom bloom in your little tank. You can't do all 30 gallons at the same time, because then you're cycling the whole tank. You'll kill your fish,
yeah,
because you're going to have a pneumonia spike that's going to kill the whole system.
Right.
So you can't do a full system reset on a small nano tank. You can take a rock out at one at a time. Make sure you got enough dechlorinator after you chlorinate that, if you're trying to kill mojanos or something. Muriatic acid's not quite so detrimental, but it is raw live rock. It doesn't have any bacteria on it, so it is certainly going to need to recycle to some extent. Yeah. So take it slow. Do like Keith does. Do it slow and methodical. If you got a big system if you've got a 100-gallon tank and you've got a 100-gallon sump on it, and you can put your fish and 70 pounds of live rock into that sump, you've got enough bacteria to keep that system going while you're doing a little mini cycle. You'll probably be okay, but you better be ready to do some big water changes if south really quickly. I've been lucky. Like I said, I've always had as much water volume in the backside grow room as I have in the display tank, and sometimes more. I just recently downsized from 500 gallons down to 450 again. And it's a 200-gallon display tank. Like I said, I've got 200 pounds of rock in the display, 200 pounds in the backside. So removing that display tank, the system can still chug along.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, that's definitely the key, is to have as many things as possible for bacteria to colonize on.
Absolutely. And reach out for advice from expert reefers or just someone you trust, your local fish store that does this all the time. Don't just go in blind and hope for the best. So having a network of friends is important in this hobby.
Yeah, no, for sure. Dwayne, any other thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, just don't give up when things go bad. Don't give up. Sometimes, unfortunately, throwing money at the problem is sometimes the only solution in this hobby. I hate to say that. It is expensive to start with, but problems will arise. Be ready for them. The more redundancy you can have, and like you mentioned, having the C-Pro in the cupboard, having the Interceptor in the cupboard, having Coral Dip, and something to quarantine any fish, because we all love to buy new fish. So.
Yes.
Be ready.
Yes. Things can happen. Anything can happen. I learned a few weeks ago that Bobby Miller and Humble Fish is like, I didn't realize you could bring in pests via snails.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to wonder if we're bringing in ick on our snails sometimes. Or like I said, even polycloud flatworms, vermetted snails. Who knows? So we know they certainly come in on clams.
Yeah. I would say likely. That's possibly, yeah. Thing to think about.
You've said it too. I always remind everyone on every live stream, don't forget to put in the work. You have to still have to do water changes. I have grow tanks. I have to break those down and clean frag racks. I have to put in your hours. As much as I like to keep my hands dry, you still got to get wet and dirty.
You don't want to suffer from Lars, right?
No.
Lazy ass reefer syndrome. Claude Schumacher mentioned that the other day on my live stream.
Line between careful neglect and Lars.
Lars.
And we, you know, you've been in the hobby. We all go through that. You can't be in love with your hobby every day, all year, for decades.
No.
The passion for it ebbs and flows. Sometimes.
So true.
Sometimes I'm obsessed. I'm working on my tank every weekend for 3 months, and some summers I'm going, you know, I'm in the middle of a bathroom remodel and I want to go camping. So sorry, you're probably going to suffer a little bit. Even suffering, I still take care of my pets, feed my fish, and just do the basics of water chemistry. It's important.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Yep. It does get tough though when the tank is not looking good. You know, it does get a little tough to get that motivation up. But
yeah, at that point, like I said, if you're not going to throw money into it, you certainly need to get some elbow grease into it and keep it going.
Yeah. No, great advice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, Dwayne, man, I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your insights. Always learning something. So I want to thank you for taking the time. And I'm sure everybody out there was appreciative in terms of all the tidbits you passed along.
Well, thanks for having me. And thanks for everybody listening. I appreciate your time. I look forward to talking to you again. And hopefully I'll catch up with you at some of the shows.
Yeah, we got to definitely connect, man.
Yeah. I'm hitting Aquashella. In what is it, May? And I told Mark, I says, I refuse to work on your fish tank. I'm not coming down to work on the fish tank. I says, for that matter, I've been down there, I think, 3 times in the last 10 years. It's time he takes me to the Dallas Aquarium.
There you go.
I've never been.
that sounds like that's a fair exchange there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, listen, I want to thank Dwayne again. I also want to thank the sponsors one more time. Polo Reef, they don't sell products, but their sponsorship of this channel stems from Andrew's belief in supporting individuals dedicated to educating and sharing information about the hobby. With that in mind, make sure you check out Polo Reef's latest video dropping Wednesday, where the Polo team does a panel discussion with Craig Bigman and Bob Stark, touching on some very interesting topics. Also look for their Friday drop video where the Polo team gears up to take 8 stunning Japanese koi to Las Vegas for the first ever Japanese American koi show in the USA. Certainly we'll be checking those out. Champion Lighting and Supply is another sponsor. Thank you, Todd. Besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. And finally, GHL. As I mentioned, I'm all in on GHL products. I use their dosers, the Proflux controllers, the Mitra lights, KH Director, etc. They produce high-quality German-engineered products. So for more information or to purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA. I also sell their stuff on reefbum.com. Also, a big thank you to Paul, who is the moderator as well as the president of the Boston Reefer Society. Please join and support your local reefing clubs. They are so important to the hobby. Also want to let you know that all episodes of Rapping with Reef Bum are available as podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Amazon. My next Rapping with Reef Bum live stream will be next Tuesday, March 26th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This will be a treat. My guests will be Julian Sprung and Charles Delbeek. You can check out the full upcoming schedule of guests on reefbum.com under the YouTube section. So until then, be safe, be well,